He raced across the wide expanse of the cracked glass lake. Only the soft crackle of static from the radio marred the near silence. The electronic device had been salvaged from the ruins of another APC, and since it was tuned to the command channel of the Blue Shirts, the invading force at Front Royal, Ryan brought the radio along just in case. But with a heavy blanket of decaying isotopes in the planetary atmosphere, even the most powerful radio transmitters had a range of only a mile. Nearly useless, but it took up little space. Shifting gears, Ryan guided the APC up a sharp incline and off the fused soil onto dead earth, not even weeds growing from the gray, sterilized soil. Slowly, over the miles, streaks of dark earth reached into the dead zone, and soon tufts of grass dotted the land. Trundling through a shallow river, the LAV broached some gentle rolling hills, and soon the black ribbon of an ancient road was visible in spots through the dense covering of weeds.
Get hard, people.
Ryan downshifted so their speed was more manageable.
We're past the crater, so Shiloh must be close.
With trained ease, the companions prepared their weapons, sliding off safeties and making sure spare ammo was available. Jack climbed into the turret of the APC and checked the action of the 25mm cannon, while Doc took the gunner spot and readied the 7.62mm ultra-fast chain gun.
Gaia, I hate crossing new craters.
Christy unwrapped some tape from the handle of a Gren and placed the live charge in the pocket of her shaggy coat.
Bad vibrations from all the death?
Mildred closed the cylinder of her Czech ZKR Olympic target pistol. The physician knew that Christy could sometimes perceive things beyond the usual five senses of other people. Her early warnings of unseen danger had saved their lives more than once.
Just the opposite. I can't feel anything in those cursed areas. Absolutely and completely nothing.
Sort of like going blind.
Christy nodded and gave a shiver.
Very much so, yes.
Glancing at a map taped to the wall, Ryan followed the ancient road to a lush forest of trees. Turning eastward, he started a long sweep around the obstruction until reaching a wide field. He braked to a halt, but didn't turn off the engines. And for a few minutes, the companion studied the area carefully, with weapons in hand. A few hundred yards ahead of them, the ground seemed to stop abruptly, and beyond was the limitless vista of the open sea. The sound of distant waves breaking on a rocky shore could be faintly heard over the rumble of the engines. Jack spoke from the turret.
Clear!
Clear!
Waiting another minute, Ryan finally turned off the engines, and silence filled the transport. Rising from the chair, the one-eyed warrior took his Steyr long blaster from the wall and worked the bolt.
Jack, stay where you are and cover us in case of trouble. When we move out, I'll be on point. Dean, stay with Mildred, Christy, then Doc. JB, take rear guard.
Leaning the rifle against a stack of crates, Ryan worked the slide on his Sig Sauer 9mm pistol, holstered the deadly blaster, and reclaimed his rifle.
Stay sharp. This is just a wreck, not a stand-up fight like at the caves. Keep a 2-yard spread and no noise. Overton's Blue Shirts could be close. We want to take them by surprise.
Ready?
JB jerked back the bolt of his Uzi.
Go.
JB unlocked the aft double doors and kicked them open. The armored slab swung aside on squealing hinges, and a wealth of fresh air poured into the vehicle. Hopping to the ground, JB gratefully stretched his legs as he listened to the sounds of life. Crickets were chirping, and a bird sang softly. Good. Their presence meant there were no big predators. The rest of the companions watched from the blaster ports, the barrels of their weapons sticking out of the APC like porcupine quills. Satisfied there was no immediate danger, JB slung the Uzi over his shoulder and pulled the mini-sextant from under his shirt. Centering the mirror on the dim sun, he cut the horizon in two, adjusting the focus with tiny movements until satisfied.
This is Shiloh, North Carolina.
JB tucked the device away.
Good.
Ryan stepped to the ground, and the men moved away to clear the way for the rest of the companions. The last person exiting, Dean closed the double doors and heard Jack bolt them from the inside. Sweeping across the field in a standard search pattern, the companions found nothing of interest, which annoyed and disappointed them at the same time.
Any signs of military traffic?
Ryan felt the tension of expected battle flow from his body.
Campfire, spent shells in the grass, a used latrine?
No signs of anything.
JB tugged his fedora down tight as protection from the wind. Going to the edge of the field, Mildred found herself looking down at the ruins of a pre-dark city partially covered with sand dunes. The beaches were festooned with driftwood and seaweed, and the ragged stumps of concrete pillions, the decaying remains of a once mighty seaport, jutted from the waves like the broken teeth of a sunken corpse. A telephone pole without wires rose from a sand dune, its crossbars filled with bird nests. Off by itself, a rusty stop sign waggled in the gusting wind. Overhead, the purple sky was slashed with streaks of fiery orange, black clouds racing by as if moved by private hurricanes. Sheet lightning flashed, and distant thunder rumbled in natural majesty above the rattling stop sign. The other companions joined Christy at the edge of the cliff and scowled at the ruins below.
Son of a bitch. You sure this is the right place?
Behind the companions, the main engine of the pre-dark wag ticked softly as the metal slowly cooled. Then the top hatch of their armored vehicle squealed open on stubborn hinges, and Jack rose into view. Even with the armor and weapons of the Bradley APC surrounding him, Jack was clearly uneasy amid this desolation. The youth said nothing, but his expression was one of intense scorn.
This isn't their base.
Christy lowered her blaster.
This isn't the homeville of anybody.
Obviously, madam.
Doc eased down the hammer of his gigantic Lamont pistol.
Nobody resides at this location but ghosts, and mayhap a few sand crabs. It is a simple village, returned to its primordial state, with nary a humble cottage remaining to be balanced by a river's brim.
Walt Whitman?
No. Me. Just me this time.
Removing his hat, J.B. grimaced as he smoothed the brim.
Crap. There's not a blaster or a war wagon sight. And the Blues were lousy with pre-dark military supplies. Seemed like Overton had more weapons than Wizard Island and the Anthill combined.
Dean scratched his head.
Maybe this is the wrong Shiloh. We knew it wasn't the one in Virginia because that town got nuked in Skydark.
Could be the Civil War battleground we once visited in the Smokies. There's even a redoubt nearby, the one with all the tunnels. That could be where they're getting the weapons and wags from.
Makes sense. But Tennessee is a mighty long way from Front Royal. If their home base is there, why choose a villain Virginia as their capital city?
A diversion. Or maybe Overton lied.
No way. He was in too much pain to be inventive. The home base of the people who attacked Front Royal is some place named Shiloh. That we can count on as a fact.
The salty breeze from the Atlantic felt good on his skin as Ryan stepped closer to the cliff for a better view. He heard a stick snap under his boots. Only the noise sounded more metallic than wooden.
Everybody freeze.
The companions went motionless, straining to detect any possible dangers. The field was empty, and nothing could be heard but the waves on the beach below.
Now listen to me very carefully. Back away from the cliff, and only step in the exact same spots you did getting here.
Ryan's heart was pounding in his chest, and suddenly his palms were damp with sweat.
What's wrong?
His father looked so strange. Every muscle was straining. Yet he was poised as if in the middle of walking. Not daring to even turn his head, Ryan spoke to the ocean.
I just stepped on a landmine.
Dropping the Uzi, JB lay flat on his belly and crawled closer to the motionless man. Gently parting the autumn grass, he saw a low swell in the soil under Ryan's boot.
Dark night, you're right. Now stay calm, and don't move. It hasn't gone off yet. It's not a TD or fire string.
Explain that to me later.
Ryan felt the ground give slightly under his weight.
Hurry, the cliff is giving way.
Sliding his knife from its sheath, JB started quickly trimming away the grass, and soon had a clear view of the mechanism. It was a fat disc with handles and a low cylinder rising from the middle, topped with a simple pressure switch.
Everybody get behind the LAV. It's a bouncing Betty.
Watching where they stepped, the others retreated to a safe distance and climbed back into the LAV.
Hope the hull will stop a Betty.
Christy flipped up the driver's hatch and stood on the seat to see outside. Doc climbed into the turret and did the same with the auxiliary hatch. Dean wiggled up there with him and squinted into the distance at the men on the cliff.
What's a Betty?
Mildred was bent over, watching through a blaster port.
The worst type of landmine, if any of the damn things can be called good. This type will blow off your father's leg with the first explosion, then a secondary charge.